South Africa's future has been looking a lot brighter recently, with the government of national unity making progress, international investors buying our bonds, and indeed some South African businesses starting to invest again. Reason? Government of national unity. One of the major players in this is the federal chair of the Democratic Alliance, Helen Zille, who joins us now. Helen, lovely to be talking with you at this. I suppose it feels like every day is an important day nowadays in politics.
Well, it is, you know. Politics changes very quickly. The famous saying, a week is a long time in politics, really counts in South Africa.
And it's so important here, because if you get the government of national unity right, you can get the economy going, you can get jobs, things can really move in an upward trajectory. If you don't, well, it goes the other way. And people in business are asking all the time, what is going on? Because the messages we get are so confusing.
Well, I think in the national government of unity, it is steady and focused, and the DA's achieved a lot in the first 100 days. So we feel that we've given it our very best shot, and our ministers are doing very well under the circumstances, and they are very complex and difficult circumstances. Of course, the real focus point this last week has been in Gauteng, and especially Tshwane, the capital city, where Celia Brink, this brilliant young leader who has done such a hard and steadfast job about trying to turn around the finances of that bankrupt city, and has just had plaudits from the Auditor General for doing so and the progress he's made. Well, of course, he's been a threat to the ANC's tenders in the solid waste sector, and he has put a lid on corruption, which is quite endemic, and they have therefore voted him out. And that is the bottom line, whatever other spin people want to put on it.
But the collaboration in that exercise of Herman Mashaba, it's caught a lot of us by surprise. Did it catch you?
Definitely not. Alec, I've been saying for a long time that Herman Mashaba is not what he seems to be, and that's putting it very mildly. And in 2019, when he left the DA and, of course, called me a racist, what's new, and lashed out at the DA, all the media believed him and gave him a wonderful platform, and he was the flavor of the month and the shiny new silver bullet that had suddenly arrived on the South African scene. And I knew the truth, and I also know in politics that you can run, but you can't hide forever. And eventually, what you are and who you are does come out, and that is what has happened with Herman Mashaba.
But someone like Athol Trollope, who is a veteran politician, R.W. Johnson was saying the other day, he's heard nothing from Athol Trollope on what's been going on in Gauteng. Does that surprise you?
Well, Athol Trollope is their leader in Parliament, so I suppose he's sticking to his knitting and not getting involved in Gauteng. I'm sure that both he and Michael Beaumont, and interestingly enough, Nasiki Moya, the new mayor, were all opposed to abandoning the DA coalition and going in with the EFF and the ANC. But Herman was determined, and of course he's never faced an elective conference. He's never been elected into his position, so he doesn't have to worry about his internal electorate. He should be worrying about his external electorate, because he's just put a bullet through his party's brain. But, you know, he just does what he likes. And I've seen this tendency years ago when he became the EFF's mayor effectively in Johannesburg. And nothing we could say could make him default to DA values.
You did mention at one of the BizNews conferences, and I'm really excited that you're going to be opening our next conference in March. You did mention that the future of South African politics was going to be this fight between the EFF and the DA. Are you still seeing it that way?
Yes, absolutely. And when I say it's going to be a fight between the EFF and the DA, I use those two parties to represent two different value sets. And I say that the EFF and MK now, on that side of the triangle that I drew then, represent the totalitarian vision of the future, the strong leader controlling the party controlling the state controlling the economy and the society, undergirded by racial nationalism, ethnic nationalism, and populism. So there are a lot of parties that very comfortably fit around that definition. And those are leaders who will never go to congresses, who dominate their party as a super leader. Their will goes with everything, no accountability. And the alternative is our side of the political spectrum: constitutionalism, the rule of law, non-racialism, a market economy, economic growth. All of those things, a meritocracy, all of those things are on our corner. And it's the beliefs that are represented by the EFF and our MK as well, versus the beliefs that are represented by the DA. That is the future of South African politics. And the ANC is very amorphous in the middle and is going to crumble between those two poles. And our big challenge is to keep our pole the strongest. Currently, it is in the government of national unity, which is why you see such a lot of confidence in the future and why you see much more investment coming in and people buying our bonds, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, politics is fluid and we're going to have to work very hard to keep it that way.
Tell us about the government of national unity. If you were running a corporation, would you be investing in South Africa on the strength of what's happening at the national level?
Well, I definitely would, and for this reason. Unless we get growth and jobs, this will fail. The big litmus test for the government of national unity is going to be, can we turn around this anemic rate of growth, and can we get more people working? So if I was somebody who had a lot of money, which I'm not, I would say, well, that's my mission, to get South Africa to work. And of course I would invest. And of course I would try and get the economy to grow as fast as possible, because that will be a self-reinforcing virtuous cycle. Now, I heard the former deputy governor of the Reserve Bank, saying that they were hoping to get 2-3% economic growth, which he thought would be great. And you'll remember we had those levels of growth in the early noughties, the 2000s. And everyone said, that's far too little. We need 6% growth. We need 8% growth. Now we would be happy if we just got back to those levels. And of course, that would mean turning the corner. But it's a long, hard slog. And the politics and the economy are mutually reinforcing or mutually destructive. If the politics collapses, the economy collapses. If the economy collapses, it's very hard for the government of national unity to succeed. So we've got to start this virtuous cycle and keep it going through investment, growth, and good government.
But what we're seeing in Gauteng in particular at the moment must be giving some business leaders pause. Because if the government, this unified grouping, is unable to make the big cities, in particularly the rich cities in Gauteng, work, you've got to think that perhaps that will white ant the government of national unity itself. How would you respond to that?
Well, you're absolutely right, Alec. And there is a major divide between the SUFI and the National Executive Committee of the ANC and even the National Working Committee of the ANC. And it is an absolute tragedy that the one province, which is the engine of South Africa's economy, falls under a person who's beholden to the Alex Mafia and who sits at the apex of interlocking networks of criminal syndicates, is all I can say, who are all looking for their access into the capital flows to loot. And it is tragic that when we pulled the ANC down to 34%. We were only 6 percentage points behind the ANC in Gauteng. And in parenthesis, I just want to say that if all the people who had voted for all of these tiny parties had voted for the DA, we would have been bigger than the ANC and we would have been able to put the government together. But as usual, all sorts of people thought that we had a ceiling on our growth and all these parties that can't get more than one or two seats somehow don't have a ceiling on their growth. They vote for them, and then they go with the ANC. Surprise, surprise. So we could have been the biggest party in Gauteng, but we weren't. And now, tragically, the SUFI has found Rise Mzansi, and I think it's Bosa, and the IFP, and that's basically what he needed, a few others, to come in and to put up a minority government. And he said very openly to some people, we can't allow the DA into government because they're going to uncover all sorts of things and they're going to do things better, and they'll start winning votes from us. And he knows that we're only 6 percentage points behind him. Now, the interesting thing is that the ANC was determined to put up their own mayoral candidate in Tshwane, but they couldn't agree on who the mayoral candidate was or should be. So a group in Tshwane had their choice, Lesufi had his choice, the National Working Committee had their choice, and they were at loggerheads and at war. And in the end, they had to all take their second choice, which was Nasipi Moyo from Action South Africa. So that is how the war is raging there. Now, Nasipi is a nice person. She's a lovely person. But quite frankly, she's going to be at the head of a maelstrom in which the EFF, various factions of the ANC, and all sorts of other people will be demanding their pound of flesh. And whether she can keep a lid on the situation or hold all those strings together, I have my very fundamental doubts. So we're going to take a capable young woman, and she is that. I'm not going to take that away from her, and destroy her in a context where she will find herself ridden over roughshod.
What happens now to the former mayor, to Celia Brunk?
Well, he'll lead the opposition there, you know. I mean, he's not a prima donna. He says he's going to run the best opposition South Africa's ever had, and he will. He's highly intelligent. He's a very good natural leader. He loves Tshwane. I mean, all of those attributes. And while we're at it, can we please find a duplicate of Celia Brunk for Johannesburg and Ekurhuleni? Please sell all your BizNews followers. We want the very best, passionate, hardworking, committed people to be mayoral candidates for us in Johannesburg and Ekurhuleni.
You've got quite a group of these young guys coming through. You think of Jordan Hill Lewis, Chris Pappas. You've mentioned Celia Brunk. There are others as well. When are they going to be hitting their straps? When will they be in a position? You know so much about politics and the maturing of a politician, that they'll be able to make a really big impact on South Africa in the future. How are you seeing that unfold?
Well, you can't make a bigger impact on South Africa than being the mayor of a city, because cities are where the economy is. And cities are what link the people of a country to the economy. And they are the places that link the economy of the country to the world economy. So cities are actually some of the most fundamental places to be well-governed and well-led. So to be the mayor of a major city like Cape Town at 35 and a major city like Tshwane at 35 is an enormous role for such a young person to be playing. But one of the reasons that the DA is successful is that we attract talent. We actively look for talent. I've just cleared a Facebook post that's going out today, and at looking for real talent for Joburg in particular. We search for talent, and then we enable talent to rise up the ranks on a meritocratic basis. So that's what you don't get in the ANC. If you're a young person in the ANC, you have to wait till you're 60 at least before you get anywhere, and you know the right people, and you've moved up the ranks. Here we say we've got an open process, apply. These are all the steps you have to go through. And you can, as a young person, come out on top. And then we've had the Young Leaders Program, and Celia and Jordan, just to mention two, are products of our Young Leaders Program. Two of our ministers are products of our Young Leaders Program. That's Solly Malatsi, who's also in his 30s, and Siwiwe Gwahube, who's also in her 30s. And they are both products of our Young Leaders Program. And so we've got many, many alumni of our Young Leaders Program. We've been running it since 2006, and it's had some wonderful outcomes. And there are phases in your life for a reason. I mean, when you get as long in the tooth as I am, you've been battered around enough to be able to take anything. And that's the hardest thing for young, talented, bright, really bright people to learn, is that it's not bad to be battered around, and it's not bad to be insulted in the public domain, because that comes with the territory. But these extremely bright, capable people who've achieved so much have never experienced that in their lives. And that is the hardest part often to master.
Talking about being battered around, you are often projected as the person, as the biggest threat to the government of national unity. Some saying that you shouldn't be criticizing it, etc.
Absolutely no threat to the government of national unity. I mean, that's an absolute joke. You know, I don't know when I've been criticizing the government of national unity. So, by the way, I mean, can you give me an example? I'd be very interested to know when I have. But I could say, you know, the sky is blue and the headline in the newspaper next day would be Zilla hates green.
But the point really is that you are outspoken. You do call a spade a bloody shovel. And there are things within the government of national unity that have to be worrying a lot of people. Some of the ministers, we're seeing inaction on Minister of Justice as an example. And I think that the criticism is, can't Helen Ziller just be a bit more diplomatic?
Well, you see, the point is that Ziller has always spoken the truth, and I happen to be the only politician who always gets into trouble for telling the truth. And I'm fine with that. I can live with that completely. I don't mind if that's on my gravestone as my epitaph one day. But the truth is that if you look at the research, Alec, you will find that there isn't an example anywhere of a coalition in which the smaller party has advanced in the next election. There isn't an example. And the reason why there isn't an example is that the smaller party seem to be swallowed up by the bigger party and abandoning their voters. I mean, a crystal clear example was the Liberal Democrats in Britain, which is a probably example that many of your listeners will know something about. So we have to keep our opposition role on critical things. We've just won some massive court cases on CADA deployment again. And the fact that we're in the government of national unity doesn't mean we pull back on that. We've won the case against John Shorpe. We haven't dropped the case against Cyril Ramaphosa for making that political speech and abusing the public platform of the SABC shortly before the election. We don't let those things go because they are matters of principle, and we still have to represent our voters. You will see that we've been very tough on the billable. The billable is critical for a huge number of DA voters, and we have to stand up for them. The important thing that we have to understand is that we have to speak up for our voters and not try to be popular with our opponents.
The billable, to perhaps close off on. You know this yes. area very well. Education, if you were to say that your 10,000 hours were spent in one area, it would be education. This yes. is getting a lot of making a lot of people unhappy. Is there some light there?
Well, we hope so. There's a big summit today on mother tongue education. And, you know, there is such a tiny handful left of Afrikaans schools, such a small handful left. They are very good and they are doing very good work and serving a crucial constituency. If you were to take away their right to determine their language policy tomorrow, it wouldn't make the slightest difference to the lack of quality in most of South African schools. It wouldn't improve education for the majority, not one iota. It would just take away a right of a small minority to something they feel passionate about and have built over generations. There's no point in doing it. You don't achieve any greater objective except power and control over people rather than facilitation, decent education. All the Sufi can do, and often the ANC, is destroy what works rather than to fix what doesn't work. And now, of course, there are going to be a whole lot of outcry zillas undermining the GNU. I'm not. I'm putting a fact out there. The critical issue in education is to fix the vast majority of very weak schools, not destroy the good ones. And it just seems that the ANC cannot get their head around that simple fact.
It certainly does appear to be playing to the type. But things like governing bodies, for instance, are they under great threat under Bella?
Yes, they are. They absolutely are. I mean, that's going to erode a lot of their powers. It's admissions policies, it's language policies, it's a whole range of things that have to, in any event, be in line with the Constitution, so they can't do what they like. And it's really very important for us to understand that the government should be nurturing these excellent governing bodies where they exist. members of governing bodies, that's how I started my political career as the chair of a governing body. They put hours and hours and hours of voluntary time into making sure that their schools run brilliantly. And then Lusufi thinks he can do it better.
Now, we had something very close to home, a prep school in Pietermaritzburg. I was there visiting family over the weekend, is going a Merkiston Prep. They hired the wrong person.
Yeah.
That's pretty obvious. And the governing body is trying to reverse that poor decision. But the ANC and in the department and the unions are now defending this guy who nobody wants there. I guess with Bella, the governing body wouldn't even be able to take the position. Or am I getting a little bit exaggerated here?
Well, no, Bella deals with governing bodies' powers over language and admissions. And in any event, you have to apply the Constitution, and you're not allowed admissions tests or anything like that in any event now as we sit here. But they really, what Lusufi wants to do is to say to all the Afrikaans schools that are left, of which there are precious few, he wants to say, you have to have dual medium. And then, of course, English becomes the majority language and then Afrikaans falls away. That has happened in every single instance where that process has been followed. So there are some Afrikaans schools who want to be Afrikaans schools. There's a demand for it. People speak Afrikaans and they do very well academically. And Lakshwaza Renika Primary School, they welcome, for example, children who speak Tswana but can't speak Afrikaans, and they envelop them in the Afrikaans, and over time with some Tswana translation and stuff, these kids speak Afrikaans. But it's Afrikaans is the language of the school. And that needs to be allowed. Instead of destroying that right in the Constitution, what is PanSALB doing to enable Zulu to be developed into a language that can be taught from grade one till the end of university? What other languages being developed? The point is, a right is something that you cannot take away from people. It's not something that you could force on people to say, you have to have education in your mother tongue. It's a choice under the Constitution. But a right is not something that you can force on people. It is something that you cannot take away from people. And at the moment, the ANC is taking away people's rights without giving anything to where they should be focusing, which is fixing the education in the vast majority of hopeless schools.
Helen Ziller is the federal chair of the Democratic Alliance, and I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.